It is Monday, October the 6th, 2014. I am Steve Gerwick, the webmaster of www.gerweck.net. I'm joined along with my longtime tag team partner, Frank D., in another edition of the Gerwick Report podcast. And let's say what's up to Frank D. today.
Hey, Steve, it's October, man. It's my favorite month of the entire year. Not only is it the month of Halloween and Frank D's birthday, but today we got two people's birthdays. I want to send a special happy birthday out to the living legend himself, Bruno Sammartino, and dead brand owner, Dixie Carter.
That's right. Today is a milestone for Dixie Carter, 50 years old, according to the reports out there. So happy birthday to both the living legend, Bruno Sammartino, WWE Hall of Famer, and TNA president, dead brand president, as you would say, Dixie Carter. Hope they both have a very good birthday. I know, judging from Dixie's tweet the other day, she really enjoyed Ole Miss beating Alabama. So maybe we can encourage her to send more tweets like that out.
Right. And if she does, maybe her iPad or her iPhone will get hacked too, and we can see what other pictures she's got.
Yeah, I guess we should right off the top here. Nick Hogan says his iCloud was hacked, and supposedly some nude pictures out there. Now, those are pictures I definitely do not want to see, Frank.
No, I don't really care about Nick Hogan. You know, Nick Hogan really injured a friend of his in an accident years ago, and I can really give two craps about Nick Hogan, so I'm not going to spend any time on that.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you there. Well, Frank, since we did the last podcast, there's been some news concerning Global Force Wrestling, something we've been talking about for a long time on the podcast. You know, what is Global Force Wrestling? What does it represent? We've seen all the tweets out there, you know, join the force. We've seen pictures of Jeff Jarrett with Kevin Nash, with Daniels, etc., all kinds of former TNA stars. And I guess we finally have an update. Nothing in terms of a television deal, but it looks like Jeff Jarrett's going to work with New Japan Pro Wrestling in January to debut New Japan Wrestling to the pay-per-view market, I guess the traditional pay-per-view market here in the United States. And, you know, Frank, I'm kind of mixed on this because I really don't see New Japan, as much as I like New Japan and I like the style of wrestling they have in New Japan, and it definitely ties together really well with Ring of Honor. But I don't know if necessarily it's going to translate well here in the United States. It looks like they're trying to reach out to Jim Ross, maybe to be the U.S. voice, the American voice, the English voice of the broadcast. But I don't know, Frank, your initial thoughts on Global Force Wrestling working with New Japan to promote the first pay-per-view here in the United States?
Well, you know what, Steve? I guess that's what Jeff Jarrett meant by join the force. And I guess it's going to be joining up with all these different, you know, sports entertainment companies around the world that are going to maybe link up together to realize that, you know, WWE is the biggest, you know, sports entertainment company there is. And if we want to even to attempt to do any kind of business that they do, we all need to come together. And I think the initial, you know, my initial thoughts about hearing it is I'm excited about it. Because I think that it can actually work. The problem, though, is that how are you going to cater this brand to the masses, to the casual WWE fan that drinks the WWE Kool-Aid, that think there's nothing wrong, that's entertained by bunny rabbits beating up people?
That's a real problem. How are they going to promote it here in the United States? I don't think they can solely fall back on social media. I don't think they can only promote through Twitter and Facebook and et cetera. I think, Frank, it would really benefit them to get some television here in the United States and maybe show the talent of New Japan Pro Wrestling. The problem is, of course, with Global Force Wrestling right now is they've not been able to secure a television deal. Otherwise, we'd hear about it by now. What could be delaying that is what's going to happen with TNA Wrestling. Will they stay in Spike? It doesn't look like Spike wants them anymore. So that means they're off Spike, which means TNA has to go elsewhere, which a potential suitor could be WGN America, which we've talked about before. But if, say, TNA goes to WGN America, suddenly WGN America is not interested in Global Force Wrestling. So them losing Spike TV could have definitely an impact, no pun intended, on where Global Force Wrestling could end up.
Well, my thing has always been, if, you know, Jeff Jarrett does indeed have Toby Keith, say, as a, you know, an investor in his organization. Toby Keith has a lot of connections, and my thing would be this brand ending up on CMT, Country Music Toby. I think that would work well. The thing about it, though, is that Spike TV, right now, Spike TV and CMT are, I believe, they're under the same banner of Viacom. That could be what's, like you said, what's holding up the deal with them getting a TV deal. I mean, it's, but the question has to be answered, is Spike TV completely out of the wrestling business? Is it that they're completely out of the wrestling business, or they are just done with TNA's brand? And if they're done with the TNA brand, would they necessarily say, okay, we want this type of entertainment on our channel, we just don't want the TNA brand anymore? That could open up a line, like you said, of you know, Global Force coming over and getting on Spike, because Spike TV still has Bellator. I mean, whether they want to admit it or not, you know, Impact does bring in a pretty good audience for their channel. Okay, that and Cops reruns. So if they want to have this, you know, genre of entertainment, it could be that they just don't want TNA anymore. You know, they're tired of subsidizing TNA and their contracts and not getting anything back for it.
Yeah, they're getting an audience with Impact Wrestling, only they can't sell the advertising they can from a Cops rerun. And that's right. The whole problem with Impact Wrestling right now. And we've talked about this before, Frank, but you know, I'm getting to the point where, and I don't ever root for somebody to go out of business. I don't root for a promotion to do poorly, because certainly we all benefit by wrestling being as popular as possible. Having two or three brands out there would be great, hot. As you said, you know, WWE is the filter. If WWE is hot, then perhaps the other promotions would be hot. But I think you're in a position now with TNA Wrestling, where they're at here in 2014, you've said it before, Frank, they're the dead brand. You should have definitely marketed those T-shirts, you know, TNA dead brand, hashtag, would have definitely caught on. But, you know, in 2014, they can't stay on Spike TV. It doesn't look like Spike TV wants them anymore. That pushes them out. That was the best TV partner they could possibly have, because they've bent over backwards for television slots, paying for production, paying for talent, etc. If they go to WGN, for example, yes, they'll get a television slot. But, you know, WGN is not going to be constantly changing their time slots. They're not going to say, oh, we'll put you on a certain night, and, oh, if something else is on that night, we're not going to say, okay, we'll just move you to another night. That's not going to happen. I don't see WGN subsidizing contracts for talent. I don't see them giving them a lot of money for TV production. If they go to WGN America or another network, I'm just, you know, using them as an example, and we're kind of tying the two subjects together, because I think right now TNA and Global Force Wrestling are kind of intermingled, because I think they're both looking to get a television deal. You know, they're not going to get the type of contract they had with Spike TV. They're going to make less money off the television deal. Keeps them alive, of course. But Frank, I don't know. To me, it's almost better if TNA would just fold, go out of business. Maybe the new promotion here with Global Force Wrestling could have an impact on the scene. They could get the television deal. They could start paying the talent, because let's face it, Frank, if you're Rockstar Spud right now, or you're Raisin Bram, you're not making any money being in TNA. And finally, TNA is letting these talents go independently and start working outside the company, but it'd almost be better for TNA to fold right now, and maybe Global Force Wrestling would get on WGN America.
Yeah, the thing with that is that, you know, I look at, you know, guys like you mentioned there, Rockstar Spud and Raisin Bram, and I look back at, you know, the match that he had with Abyss, that hardcore match at the New York City tapings a couple months ago, when they just completely tore their bodies up for TNA. And it made no damn sense to me whatsoever. Why would you do that? I'm not one to say, okay, I want to see a wrestling company go out of business. I don't want to see that. TNA has been around, and honestly, at this point, I can't imagine what the wrestling landscape would look like if TNA were to go out of business. It wouldn't look very good. It would look, you know, bad. And a lot of these guys, you know, aren't making any money in TNA. And I get your point of why do you need them to be around. I don't know, man. It's just a very, very complicated situation, because I'm having big feelings about it. I look at Spike TV, and I've heard people have said in the past, they've actually come on this podcast and said, oh, Spike TV was the worst partner for TNA. And I don't agree with that, because here's the thing. You know, what other company out there, what other network did you see that was subsidizing talent contracts? Okay, the only time that ever happened is when, you know, you would say maybe a Time Warner would be subsidizing, you know, contracts for WCW wrestlers. But in reality, Steve, they owned the WCW company, so they weren't subsidizing anything. But in this situation, you know, Spike TV was subsidizing contracts for Hulk Hogan, Sting, Kurt Angle, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And they didn't own any ownership stake in the company. And yet they were doing that, and like you said, if the ratings were down, if they felt that they could grow the brand, they would move from different nights. I mean, they shuffled TNA around so many times, it was just crazy to me, mind-boggling. You know, they would try them on Saturday, then they would move them to Thursday. Now, you know, they move them to Wednesday. I mean, and then they move them to Monday. It's like, wow. They had so many opportunities to grow the brand or whatever, but for some reason, it just never happened. They're definitely on life support right now. Would TNA go out of, if TNA were to go out of business tomorrow, would that help the Global Force Wrestling get a TV deal? Would that secure them a TV deal somewhere else? I don't really think so. I just think that wrestling in a nutshell, in a whole, is in a bad place right now. And not a lot of networks want to, you know, have wrestling. And if they do, say, get Global Force Wrestling on the map and get them on the air somewhere, who's to say they're going to give them any real money to produce the shows?
I'm just saying right now, Frank, both want television deals. Impact Wrestling wants a television deal. Global Force Wrestling wants a television deal. So they're essentially competing for the same slot somewhere.
Right, but here's the thing with the difference between TNA and Global Force that TNA actually has over GFW. TNA actually has history on television. They actually have been on Spike TV all these years, and they actually have had an audience. It's declined, but they have had an audience. Jeff Jarrett has his Global Force Wrestling consists of some videos that they've done on YouTube, and that's all it is. So they don't have that status quo in the business to say that we can, you know, we've done this on Spike and everything and every other any other network out there. I think WGN America or Discovery or whatever they end up being on. Will it be a good deal in the long run for TNA? I mean, you know what? It's better than nothing, as Iron Sheik would say. But how long is that actually going to last?
Well, you said, I couldn't imagine the landscape without TNA, or it would look bad without TNA. Well, it looks bad with TNA.
I'm not
rooting for a company to fold. Don't get me wrong. I mean, if tomorrow $1 million or billionaire decides, I'm going to invest in pro wrestling, another Ted Turner comes along and says, well, I'll buy this TNA wrestling and put it on my network, and let's start putting money in it. Let's get it going. I'd be all for that, but that's not going to happen, Frank. It's just not. And it's on life support. And I think it was Atlee Green on the Body Slam podcast talked about this one time. You know, people are rooting for TNA to survive, but essentially, if TNA is blocking Global Force Wrestling, and again, I don't know exactly what Global Force Wrestling is, but it's something different. It's something that we've not seen before. We know what we're going to get with Impact. If Impact survives, it's going to be the same show. Okay? Nothing's going to change. They're not going to make any money. The talent's not going to make any money. I mean, you know, you've said before, you know, I feel bad about, you know, the talent losing their jobs if TNA folds. Well, Frank, they're not making any money. Rockstar Spud and the guys we mentioned, you know, the women, they're not making any money. They're looking for outside bookings because TNA doesn't run any shows. And, yeah, they have 1 million viewers. Again, I don't mean to harp on this, but where are the 1 million viewers that watch Impact Wrestling? As I said, they don't buy T-shirts. They don't go to live events. They don't order pay-per-views, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Where is these 1 million viewers? And honestly, if Impact can put on Cops and get a similar audience and make more ad revenue from Cops, yeah, I mean, that just shows you where Impact is right now. There's been no growth. I mean, really, I think that the growth has regressed rather than progressed. And I don't know, Frank. It's we've rooted for TNA for how long? I remember the Hotline days were rooting for TNA. You know, X Division, the women, etc. They had, you know, Angle versus Samoa Joe, etc. They had the six-sided ring, and then they had the four-sided ring, and then they had all these great X Division talent. Elix Skipper flipping off the cage, but in the end, they're just nothing. And I don't know if they're standing in the way of Global Force getting a deal, then let's let Global Force have a chance, because I mean, Impact is just going to spin in circles. That's about all it's going to do.
Yeah, I mean, I'm all for Global Force and getting their shot and seeing what they do. But at the end of the day, the Global Force Wrestling is being started up by Jeff Jarrett, the same guy who started up TNA.
Isn't it funny that he's starting on the pay-per-view market when essentially the wrestling pay-per-view market is totally dead? I mean, WWE is getting out so that they have their own network because, you know, in recent years, the WWE pay-per-view market has dried up as well. So it seems like it's a real bad time to enter the wrestling pay-per-view market right now.
Yeah, I mean, it is. I mean, WWE, you know, we're still doing about over 200,000 buys for their shows. But they saw it right on the wall with the pay-per-views, and that's why they went to their own, you know, network or whatever. And I still think TNA is making a huge mistake by not utilizing their video content that they have at their video library, their TNA on demand. They're making a big mistake with that. But as far as Global Force goes, I'm all for Global Force getting a TV deal. I'm all for Global Force making it and succeeding. But at the same token, I remember that Jeff Jarrett's the one at the helm, and he was the one at the helm when NWA TNA first launched back in 2002. I hope that what he does differently this time is he needs to have people with focus and direction in the organization, and not people that are all over the board running the company.
You know, we were having a great conversation before we did this podcast about, you know, Global Force Wrestling, and you were, you know, bringing up the point there's not much talent available out there on the market, and I was just saying, I believe Daniels and Kazarian don't have contracts with Ring of Honor. So if I'm Global Force Wrestling and maybe I can get a television deal, suddenly I have these guys.
Right.
And then, you know, your argument was, well, these guys really weren't helping TNA. And I wouldn't limit my roster only to TNA talent or former TNA talent, but it's a start. I mean, people know who Kazarian is. People know who Daniels is. And that's a start. It's something you can build around. And I do think there is a crop of talent out there, and certainly they're not big names today because, I mean, Frank, the guys in WWE aren't exactly big names. I mean,
right.
Yeah, people know who John Cena is. People know who Randy Orton is. But when you get beyond that, there's a big drop-off, in my opinion. People know Brock Lesnar because he was in the UFC to a larger degree. Not necessarily because he's a WWE superstar or the WWE champion right now. The talent field, the crop of talent out there is low right now, but I do think there is a number of guys out there that could come in and really help Global Force Wrestling if that's the direction they go. Although, Frank, I mean, they're signing international deals with different promotions. So, again, the million-dollar question is, you know, what is Global Force Wrestling exactly? We've been talking about this for how long, and we really still don't have a definitive answer exactly what it is.
Yeah, I'm lost, too. I don't know what it's supposed to be. I mean, that's something that maybe, you know, Jeff Jarrett would like to come on the podcast and tell us exactly what Global Force Wrestling is supposed to be and what their plan is going to be and their ultimate goal of who they're talking to and what network they would like to end up on. That's something that he would have to come on here and address, because I can tell you, I don't know. And the likelihood of him getting, you know, like, he's taking pictures with Kevin Nash and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, well, Kevin Nash, as far as I know, I thought Nash was retired from in-ring competition. So what is Nash going to do for Global Force?
And last we've heard about Nash, he was putting over the WWE, that he's, you know, happy back with the WWE family.
Right.
Got to the Royal Rumble and came back as Diesel one more time. And I would think if Kevin Nash would have one more match, it would be with the Whip. It wouldn't be in Global Force Wrestling.
Oh, I'm totally in agreement with that. I think that Nash would do it in a heartbeat. But I think also to be, you know, honest about it, I think Nash does do indie shots here and there. So
not to wrestle though, right?
I think he does wrestle.
Does he wrestle? He still wrestles. Okay.
I
know he's currently doing a movie project, I know.
Okay.
But beyond that, I don't know. Is him and Hall are still working tag matches out there?
I don't know. I don't know if it's him and Hall. I think it might be Cody Hall, not Scott.
Okay.
But I think it might be Cody. I think sometimes he may occasionally team up with Sean Waltman. But I think Nash does the one, you know, here. I mean, come on. I mean, what's he going to do? Nash is going there and do, you know, Snake Eyes, Side Slam, Powerbomb.
True.
Make his money. You know, I like Nash. Nash is a hustler. He'll go out there and do what he needs to do.
Well, we've talked about this a lot, so let's cap it here. It's October the 6th, 2014. Dixie Carter's been saying that as, what, January 5th, she'll have a new television deal. She's told the talent that, or whatever the date would be. And yet, you know, it's 2 months away. We don't have any information. There's no great insider scoop that, yeah, they have a television deal with said network. So do you think, Frank D., today that TNA will land on another network, or do you think, you know, Dixie's just kind of blowing a lot of hot air out right now?
I think that Dixie would not lie to her locker room. I think that they probably will end up on a network. Now, the network that they end up on might not be what Spike TV was, but they'll end up somewhere. And if it doesn't work on the network that they're going to be on, then I think then we will see them finally fold out. But I think Dixie might be telling the truth, because they're signing these, they have these international TV deals that they just recently did. Whatever network they end up on, whatever network takes them, and if they get, you know, a low ball offer, they'll make it up with the international rights fees that they get for those TV shows over there. Because I think over there they might be doing Impact and they might be doing Explosion or something like that, and they make money off of that. So I think they'll end up somewhere. But if TNA is listening to the podcast right now, you guys need
to and they probably are.
You guys need to get away from Impact. That it needs to go away.
That's a totally dead brand.
Totally dead brand. If you guys are going to be on a new network, you need to come up with a whole new concept of a TV show. That whole thing is Impact is done. Impact equals failure, in my opinion.
No buys, as Brian Alvarez would say, no buys.
Yeah, no buys for that at all.
Because we've seen they've had the million to 1.4 million viewers a week, and nobody buys their pay-per-views.
Right.
So, and nobody goes to their house shows, as I said. No merchandise. I don't know, Frank, when you're on the street, do you ever see anybody wearing a TNA t-shirt? I mean, we put the challenge out there.
I don't see them.
Find somebody with a TNA t-shirt. Do they even have t-shirts?
You know, to be honest with you, I'm gonna be totally honest with you. I have been here in the town I live in, and I've seen a person wear a wrestling t-shirt. I've seen one person wear a t-shirt that was wrestling related. It was a CM Punk t-shirt. That's it.
Yeah, I see John Cena shirts occasionally. I see Randy Orton t-shirts occasionally. If I had to pick it, if I see any shirt, anything wrestling related, it's usually John Cena. But I have seen a couple just say WWE, or they say, you know, Randy Orton. I don't honestly believe I've ever seen anybody wear a TNA t-shirt.
I can't say that I have.
I mean, that's part of your business model is sell merchandise, right? I mean, you have a television show to promote your product, buy our product. What is our product? Buy our pay-per-views, buy our DVDs, buy our wrestling shirts, et cetera, et cetera. I just don't know where they at. Where's these 1.4 million rabid TNA fans that watch the show and it doesn't translate to anything?
Yeah, I couldn't tell you. I don't know.
I mean, they don't I don't know. It's like I said, I'm not rooting for TNA to fall. Don't get me wrong. I'd love to see, Toby Keith tomorrow say, hey, okay, Dixie, let's make this deal. Let's get on CMT. And, you know, I tried with Jeff Jarrett. Didn't work out with him. I'll go with you guys. Here's some money. Or what's the guy from Smashing Pumpkins?
Billy Corgan.
Maybe he calls tomorrow and says, look, Dixie, I've got money. Smashing Pumpkins have sold millions of records. Right? I got money. Let me buy the company. Let me get you a television deal. Maybe he's got some television influences out there at the networks. I'll get you a television deal, and we can survive. But I just don't see it happening. I think Toby Keith probably saw the books when they were talking and said, yeeks. And not to mention, you know, Bob Carter still was insistent upon Dixie having a role in the new company. So
I think that's what did it.
That probably is.
I think it had nothing to do with the books. I mean, it's like, because a lot of the due diligence is that, okay, just because I'm buying TNA doesn't mean I got to buy their debt. That's Pan Energy takes care of that. It's kind of like when WWE bought WCW. They didn't buy WCW's debt. They just bought.
They bought the assets.
They bought the assets, exactly.
But then again, at that time, WCW was folding, which is, I don't know, you're probably eventually going to see Vince buy TNA Wrestling, right? buy the trademarks, buy the logos.
I'll be honest with you, Steve. I would think if I had to pick somebody who would buy it first, I would think Jeff Jarrett would buy it first.
Well, he owns, what, 20%? I think he owns a
minority stock in it, and he would obviously, being a minority owner, he would get the due diligence on the company. He would get the book.
Well, he quit in December, right?
Yeah, but he got out.
Yeah, he still owns 20%, but I mean, if it was salvageable, he would stay there and try to buy the company.
Right, but I think that if they were to fold, though, in order to get his hands on the video vault, he would. So to make it clear, if Jeff Jarrett was in Global Force Wrestling, if they were to have him do matches, if he were to do matches in Global Force, which I don't think he should be at this point, but if he were to do matches at Global Force or have, you know, AJ Styles doing matches over there, anybody, and they have videos of these people, they can easily do compilation DVD packages featuring matches from Global Force and TNA. Who'd say that Global Force also wouldn't have a working relationship with Ring of Honor, which everybody would benefit from that? And I think if they wanted to do really try and get a television deal, okay, well, why don't you go out there and get some type of a relationship going out there if they don't already have one. Get a relationship going right now with Eric Bischoff. Who knows more about TV deals than Eric Bischoff?
And we heard from the Vince Russo interview that Spike TV was impressed with Eric Bischoff. Certainly they know what him and Jason Hervey have a television production company.
Right.
So, yeah, I think that would definitely make sense. But going back to Jarrett and TNA real quick, the guy left in December. That tells me that Spike TV probably made the decision to get rid of Spike or to get rid of Impact Wrestling probably around that time. Because in an ideal world, if you're going to survive, then buy TNA in December. You keep the Impact Wrestling contract with Spike TV, which has been a great television partner, you know, despite what Vince Russo says. As we said, they help with Hulk Hogan's contract. They help with Eric Bischoff's contract, Kurt Angle, etc. I can move time slots when I want, pretty much. That would be the ideal thing, is to stay with Spike Television. I think he kind of knew the writing was on the wall in December when Toby Keith's deal didn't go through. And I just don't think Jeff would have gone down that venture knowing the realization of TNA. And, of course, he would know the books very well, too, being part owner of the company. I think his best bet would be at that time is to buy TNA and keep it on Impact Wrestling. As I said, Frank, TNA or Global Force Wrestling, they're never going to find a partner like Spike TV. And we can criticize them for not being a top-ranked network, and they don't have the top-rated TV shows out there. But at the end of the day, they're a great television partner for Impact Wrestling, and I don't think either of those companies are going to find a TV partner as good as Spike TV.
No, they won't. And Jarrett knew something, because that's why Jarrett got out of there. He knew something or saw something, and that's why it was easy for him to walk away and say, you know what, the hell with this.
It's kind of like Hulk Hogan always leaving the ship when the ship is sinking.
Pretty much.
You know, get out of WCW, the ship is sinking. Then he was in TNA for a while. This ship is sinking, goodbye. I'll go back to the whip.
Yeah, and I don't really care for anything he does either, to be honest with you.
But I really like your idea. Eric Bischoff knows the television landscape. He has television shows that are on TV. Him and Jason Hervey from the Wonder Years have their own TV production company. Reach out to him and help you negotiate a television deal with somebody, because if anybody out in the wrestling world could probably do it, it'd be Eric Bischoff.
Yep, I totally agree, man.
But on another front, let's talk about, the whip. Today's wrestling product is, Frank, I was having a conversation with someone, a wrestling promoter. I won't say the name. Somebody I've been friends with for a long time, and he's probably about my age. And I was having a conversation the other day with him. I haven't talked to him in a while, and he's like, so Steve, what do you think of today's wrestling product? And I said, man, you know my opinion on today's wrestling product. And he said, yeah, the problem is today's wrestling product is not geared for us, meaning our age group. And I would include you in our age group as well, too, Frank, because today's wrestling product is not geared towards anybody beyond about 15 years old. The wrestling product is for a younger audience. But as you have really pointed out, Frank, the younger audience, the 13 to 15-year-olds, the younger people, I don't think they want to watch a three-hour wrestling show. You have your video games out there, violent video games. You have Netflix on demand. You have Hulu on demand. You're text messaging. You're on social media, etc. We've said it for so long now, Frank. The product is so stale, and realistically, Frank, there's not much on the horizon to change that around. And I think, as we're talking, I think they're going to continue with status quo, even with maybe Triple H getting more in charge of WWE. And I think we're kind of stuck with the WWE product for quite a while.
Yeah, and the product blows. That's the bottom line. You know, they're you know, the product, like you said, is not geared towards, you know, your age bracket or my age bracket anymore. It's more children, you know, it's geared to 13-year-old boys, whatever. I can tell you, see, when I was 13 years old, I was watching wrestling, but it was a different time. You know, when I was watching wrestling, the WCW had the NWO angle going on, and it was hot. So for this company to be gearing their product towards children and that 13 to 14, you know, teenage demographics, when you have a guy in a bunny suit doing moves on people, that's not really something that I would watch as a 13, 14-year-old, you know, kid. I couldn't go to school and talk about this because most likely people would think, honestly, would think that I'm retarded or something for watching it. It's just a bad product. This is a bad show. It's been like that for a while. There's really just, I don't know. It's just, I don't know what they can do about it because it sucks. The product is just so bad. And to be honest with you, I'm sick and tired of seeing Triple H and Stephanie every week on my damn TV.
And to start the show almost every episode, it seems like they come out.
Right. Which is
tonight,
I don't watch.
Probably when you tune in to Gerwig.net for live coverage of Raw, because, you know, I can't see because I don't have cable anymore, satellite. I bet it opens with Stephanie and Triple H coming out, as almost always does. And as you said, I'm tired of those two. I don't want to see them anymore. But let's move on. And people are talking. I saw Vince McMahon tweet out. He saw one of the recent NXT specials. He's like, the future's bright for WWE. But you've seen, you know, other than like Bray Wyatt, who is now buried, you saw Adam Rose come up. You saw Paige come up. You saw Bo Dallas. So just because they're hot in NXT doesn't mean they're going to translate. Because when they come on WWE television, Frank, they're just going to be generic, boring characters.
Pretty much, yeah. You know, like I said, Adam Rose is a perfect example of that. You know, they lost interest in him and her, and now they got the bunny. You know, it's just stupid, man.
We went from the Playboy bunny to the WWE bunny.
Pretty much, and I'm pretty sure Vince McMahon didn't send that tweet out. I'm pretty sure of that.
No, I don't think, especially knowing that, like, Triple H, when he tweets, you know, he thinks we're all wrestling marks anyways.
Right.
So he doesn't want to talk to us. That's below his nose. So you have the social media ambassador. Probably that social media ambassador that got the slap down from Alberto Del Rio probably does a lot of the social media for the higher-ups in WWE.
I would probably think so. Because they're not doing it on their own. I bet you Vince doesn't even know how to tweet.
All he knows how to do is pull his pants down and have somebody kiss his ass.
Exactly. Which at the time was entertaining.
Yeah. More entertaining than what we're seeing today.
Yep.
And, you know, Frank, we've heard it before saying, well, WWE may get a little more edgy. And I was telling you about Global Force Wrestling. We were talking offline. That's what you need. I mean, TNA is not going to get it done. Have Jeff Jarrett or somebody else start up. And have an edgy product, have some edgy characters, have some edgy storylines. I mean, I know I've talked about Ring of Honor before as well. I mean, if you're tired of sports entertainment, Ring of Honor is wrestling. It's not sports entertainment. You're going to get interviews talking about matches. You're going to see some great wrestling action. Now, I saw it this weekend, Frank. I didn't think it was one of the better episodes. In all honesty, they still have Michael Elgin as the Ring of Honor champion in Ring of Honor television, even though Elgin lost a championship to Briscoe how many weeks ago, which makes me believe maybe taking the title off Elgin was a spur-of-the-moment decision, and they had all this television already pre-taped. But at the end of the day, when I think of Ring of Honor, I mean, that's my only hope in wrestling right now. That's about the only thing I'm really watching on a weekly basis. You know, I get the tape Sunday morning because they air it at 1 in the morning in my local time. I tape it or DVR it, I guess the new phrase to be politically correct now. DVR it. Sunday morning I get on the treadmill and I watch the show. And it's the one thing that I really look forward to because You know, we talk about WWE product stinks, Impact Wrestling stinks, etc. That's about the only thing going right now in the TV landscape is ROH. And, of course, the problem, as we said before, is not everybody sees it. But if Jeff Jarrett or another group wants to start out and have some edgy character and edgy product, I'm all for that. Because I think, you know, Frank, if they're not going to make these edgy characters in WWE, and we've talked about it for a while now, you know, we need some new edgy characters, storylines, etc. If they're not going to deliver to me, you know, look elsewhere. Goodbye. I mean, there's other things on television other than WWE television.
Right. The bottom line is that if they were to come in and create an edgier product, that's what WWE is not today, I think that would be successful. But we also have to look into the situation of what society is today. And like we had talked about in the last podcast with Frankie Kazarian, you know, Steve, honestly, society today is a little bit too pussyfied, you know what I mean? Television is different. Television is a lot more reality-based, and I think we need more reality-based, you know, storylines. I mean, my thing would be like this. You know, one of the things I used to hear about Vince Russo back in the day when he was running WCW, or when he was in charge of creative, I should say, at WCW, he would like to take real-life situations and put them out there on the screen. I mean, are you in favor of that necessarily? Of if somebody has a real life issue backstage, put it on the camera for the world to see?
It would depend on if the person would want to do that, and is it something that people are going to get engaged? I mean, the whole thing with wrestling is you have to give me characters I care about. You have to give me storylines I care about. And yeah, maybe sometimes real life drama can lead to something interesting, but at the end of the day, when you write television and you write characters and storylines, has to be something that people are going to sink their teeth into, and I'm just tired of all this generic crap that they're giving us.
Yeah, I don't even know why they even call the show Raw anymore. There's nothing,
what's Raw about it?
Yeah, there's nothing Raw about the show. I just think it's just, they said the longest episodic, you know, TV show running today. There's nothing about that show that's remotely Raw. When I think of TV shows that are Raw right now, I think of Sons of Anarchy. I think of The Walking Dead. I'm looking at Gotham. I'm looking at Sleepy Hollow. You know, you got all these different TV shows out there right now that people are watching. And you turn on the WWE show, and it's a damn person in a bunny suit.
It's a cartoon.
It's a cartoon. Or you got Seth Rollins out there with green crap being, you know, exploding in his face out of the Money in the Bank briefcase. What are we watching? What is this, Nickelodeon Double Dare or something? It's just, it really makes you embarrassed to be a fan of WWE. And, you know, you have other wrestling companies like, you know, Ring of Honor out there that, yeah, they can be edgy, but at the end of the day, not a lot of people get their products. It's all about taking, you got to take the casual WWE fan and flip them to watching your show. Also, you got to get those alienated wrestling fans that no longer watch the product anymore and get them back into the genre as well in order to be successful. It goes both ways there. You know, but my belief has always been the trickle-down effect. I think that if WWE is doing good, everybody else is going to do good too. And Jeff Jarrett did an interview, I think it was earlier this year, talking about, you know, he thought there was going to be a big boom period in wrestling again, right? I didn't believe that because he said, because based on the WWE network and technology, WWE network is a joke. It's not gone the way they wanted to go. That whole statement is completely flawed.
Well, you know, Frank, I don't know if I could say WWE network is a joke. That might be a little strong.
I think it's a
joke. I wrote a blog on the reason I let my subscription expire, and I kind of expected to be more favorable, the comments towards my point of view. And you had people on there saying, well, it's only been up a year, and, you know, this guy expects every single show to be on there, including Velocity, etc. No, I just expect the core content that people really want to see, such as the Raws that were Raw back in the day. You know, we've talked about it before, the old WWF superstars of wrestling with Jesse and Vince, the wrestling challenges, which I want to acknowledge today is the 15-year passing of Gorilla Monsoon. You know, yeah. When I think of primetime wrestling and Wrestling Challenge, you know, watching Bobby the Brain Heenan, those two had such great chemistry. I mean, why is that show on there? Why am I watching, Total Divas? I mean, that. So I can't say the WWE Network is a joke, but
I think
it's
a joke.
Definitely been.
It's a joke compared to a disappointment. It's a joke to me compared to what the Classics on Demand service used to be. I mean, Classics on Demand, and people right now are complaining on the WWE Network's Facebook page about how they've just completely abandoned old school. They completely abandoned the WCCW. They've completely abandoned ECW Hardcore TV. And you didn't see that on Classics on Demand. They would update that stuff, like, I think it was every other week or something like that. They were updating updating the content. So to me, it's a joke. Because it's a joke because you have an on-demand service that's supposed to be over the top, and you own all the content in your library. You have said that they have some, you know, I think they said, 5,000 or more hours of content, or my number might be a little bit off, but they have so much content right now that's already digitized, and yet it's not on the damn network. People were saying, oh, well, it's been up almost a year or whatever. Well, you know what? Look at this thing has been planned for years. They first mentioned the first promos of this back in 2011. So they've had time to get all this stuff, you know, ready and all this. And it's flagrant false advertising is what it is. It's all it is false advertising. They haven't given you what they said they were going to give you. I understand. See, they had played a Dick Flair documentary the other night. And when they showed the blood in the documentary, they filtered it with a black and white filter.
On the network.
On the network. That's supposed
their
to
network.
Say, on their network, that's supposed to be all the content is supposed to be uncensored, right? And they have parental controls on there. So, and they've also been producing the Monday Night War show, which is one show that's the regular version, and then a PG version that's going to have the blood and all that stuff censored. Which I have no problem with that. But some people were saying that the Dick Flair documentary had the black and white filter on it, and there was no other version of it. And it was already on demand.
Wow.
So that's why
amazing.
I say it's a joke. Because they're full of crap. Music edits are one thing, but when you start filtering the damn video that you're watching, that I'm paying, you know, that I was paying $9.99 a month for, when you start filtering that, that's a joke. Especially when you have parental control.
If Jeff Jarrett's comments were based on the WWE Network catching on, and I think at the end of the day, I think we both agree, when it's all said and done, the WWE Network will be a success. It will be profitable, but I don't think it's going to cause a wrestling revolution. In fact, a lot of time when you watch the older content on the network, it just shows you how bad today's wrestling product really is.
See, I don't think there will ever be a wrestling revolution. That ain't never going to happen. Wrestling is where it is. And that's all. And that's where it always will be. It doesn't matter if it's Global Force Wrestling, if it's New Japan, whoever. It's a different time now. It's a different time. It's a different cast of characters. And yeah, they're doing a lot better matches nowadays, but a lot of these wrestlers today don't have the charisma of, say, guys from the past like Scott Hall and Kevin Nash and people like that. They don't have it. You know, it's a different time now.
Yep. I think we've given the WWE Network its fair shake. And, I mean, we've said a lot of good things about it, you know, when it first debuted, and we said a lot of negative things about it. I just am disappointed. I just expected, you know, they were saying 2012 it's going to launch, and now it's 2014. They push it so hard, you know, $9.99, and they just don't have the shows I really want to see that I really expected to see. Primetime wrestling, et cetera, and AWA wrestling. And there's just so much they're sitting on, and what is taking so long to get this content? I understand they've only been running, they've been operational since, February of this year, so 8 months. But you're not even hearing them talking about, well, quickly, coming soon, Wrestling Challenge with Gorilla Monsoon and Bobby the Brain Heenan. AWA wrestling from the vault. Where is this material? I mean, why am I seeing Total Divas and the wrestling reality show with Roddy Piper and the other guys? I mean, no disrespect to those guys, but when I think of the network, I want to see the classic stuff. I mean, that's what really is what they can tout is you can see the 80s stuff, this 90s stuff, the real good stuff, and yet a lot of that stuff is still missing today. And that was my whole point of that blog is, eventually I expect to come back to the network, Frank, at some point, but right now I'm just disappointed with the stuff that's missing, and I just can't believe after 8 months it's still not there.
Yeah, I can't believe that either. It was simply because they had so much content they said they have digitized, and we're not seeing it on the network. And just the way they have completely abandoned the other sections there, it's just I don't understand it. I don't understand the logic. I mean, I don't know who Vince McMahon has in control as his programming director for this network, but the live stream is a problem. The live stream is nothing but repeats from the on-demand section. Well, they can be playing different content like Primetime Wrestling, you know, Tuesday Night Titans, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I can name the shows up and down the line that they can be playing on there if they're not doing it.
Amen to that. Well, sticking with the current product, we did run a poll, actually a poll that Frank D. suggested we run. Who will win the WWE Championship first? We put the three members of The Shield, or formerly of The Shield, Roman Reigns, Dean Ambrose, and Seth Rollins. And in the final equation, even though that Money in the Bank winner, Seth Rollins, has the title opportunity, he came in second place. Roman Reigns won with 41%, even though he's injured right now. Seth Rollins second with 39%, and Dean Ambrose a distant third with 20%. Honestly, Frank, I think we agree here, and we vote on for the same person here. Of these three names, I think Dean Ambrose is the more engaging character, the more interesting character, and I think, to answer your poll question here, Frank, I think Ambrose is going to get the title before the other two guys.
I would hope so. I don't really understand what people see in Roman Reigns. I don't get it. I think Dean Ambrose, he has it right now. I think he's in a very good position right now to be the number two babyface in the company. I think that if he has merchandise out there, they can start moving that. But it's just they have the problem with Dean Ambrose is that he's so constricted by this PG. Because I know if this was a TV-14 situation, he would go way further. But once again, you know, I said when we were talking to Kazarian, you can present edgy TV in a PG environment. It just all goes back to your creative. Right now, the biggest problem in WWE is creative.
Or lack thereof creative.
Lack thereof. There you go. Lack thereof creative. But, you know, I think that Ambrose might be the one to get it. You know, obviously Seth Rollins is probably going to cash in and it'll be successful for him. But just Roman Reigns, I don't understand what people are saying about the guy. I have not seen anything remotely, you know, that fascinates me about Roman Reigns. And I may have said on previous podcasts, oh, I think he might be cool, whatever. But I'm talking about lately, I haven't seen anything. Pre-injury, nothing.
Well, they want all their characters to be generic to a certain degree anyways.
And that's the problem.
They're all vanilla. They all taste vanilla, they look vanilla, and they're all vanilla.
Yep.
I mean, what is that outfit Seth Rollins is wearing right now?
I have no idea.
What's he supposed to be?
I have no idea, but that's, I mean, you know,
the
one thing that I will say about Roman Reigns is that they did keep him with the cool attire, you know, because I don't know what Seth Rollins got on. That's just, I don't know what the hell that's supposed to be.
Sticking with poll results for the month of September, we asked, should the Hardy Boys, Matt and Jeff, be inducted into the Gerwig.net Hall of Fame? And they had 78% of the vote, which means I was just, you know, discussing this with Frank, that era of all the tag matches, the TLC matches, the Dudley Boys, Hardy Boys, and, of course, Edge and Christian. Five of the six members now in the Hall of Fame, and I have no problem with Jeff and Matt getting in the Hall of Fame, and I congratulate them. I definitely deserve it. In fact, really, Frank, I'm a little surprised it was 78%. I really thought they would get a higher vote total. You know, maybe some of the negative aspects of the Hardy Boys, the arrest and some of the other things maybe hurt them, but as a tag team, they definitely belong in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I don't have a problem with that at all. I voted for them to go in, so I'm not at all, I don't have a problem with that. You know, what they do in their personal time, that's their personal business. It doesn't affect me.
78%, did that surprise you, Frank? Although, I guess when you think about it,
not really.
We both expected Diamond Dallas Page to get in. He got less than 70%.
Yeah, so. That doesn't surprise me at all. It's about right. I mean, they're not going to blow it up, you know what I mean?
True. And, of course, this month at Gerwig.net, encourage you to go vote for the Hall of Fame, and this month's candidate is Lex Luger, a name we've talked about before here on the podcast, maybe a name potentially for the WWE Hall of Fame, but for the month we consider Lex Luger for the Hall of Fame. Are you going to vote yes or no, Lex Luger for the Gerwig.net Hall of Fame?
Oh, I've already voted yes. I think Luger definitely should go on there. Put all the personal stuff aside. People want to admit it, they don't want to admit it. Lex Luger was and is a star in his business. I don't know. A lot of people have a problem with him because of the final days of Elizabeth. But you know what? That had nothing to do really with Lex Luger as far as my voting goes. You know, I don't know what happened with there. I would say Liz had demons of her own. She handled them the way she handled them. And I'll leave it at that. Because I wasn't there to know exactly what happened.
Yeah, there were two people that really shouldn't have been together at that time.
True.
But I don't know. I feel kind of conflicted about this story. I can think back to the WWE Confidential piece they did on Lex Luger,
which was a complete burial that they wanted to do. Vince took a situation there that he shouldn't have played around with, and he put it on there just to bury Lex Luger.
That might be the only other similar piece to the self-destruction of the Ultimate Warrior.
Right. Same thing.
Those two pieces were designed to bury two talents.
Yep, and he did that. No doubt, he did that to bury Luger because of what happened with Luger back in '95.
Wow, it's amazing you can hold a grudge that long, and to put a piece out like that. Although I did like that old. And again, where's that show? Where's the Confidential show? You know, it was something different. You know, Gene Oakland hosting a Confidential show. It was.
I love Confidential until it became a joke.
Yeah. 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 The first few were really good, and then they turned it into fluff.
Yep.
Well, along with Lex Luger, his former tag team partners back in the news, Frank, we've talked about Sting now since we've started doing this podcast. Is he going to sign? Is he going to do WrestleMania? Is he not going to do WrestleMania? There's reports out there that suggest that Sting is finally going to come to WWE television, possibly setting up a match at WrestleMania. I don't know, Frank, are you buying this? Is it one of those you have to see it to believe it?
I have to see it to believe it, but I'm also one of the people that's buying it because I don't see any reason why it shouldn't at this point happen. If they wait another year, it'll be too late. This is the perfect time. Sting has always been built from being from Venice Beach, California. So WrestleMania 31 is going to be out here on the West Coast, Cali. Frank D is going to be there live at the Levi's Stadium. It's only appropriate for the Stinger to go into the Hall of Fame. And I think if Sting goes in, you definitely might see Macho Man Randy Savage going in.
Well, real quickly to today's product, though, do you think Sting's going to come back and actually wrestle in a WWE ring?
I absolutely think he will.
And who do you think he's going to wrestle at WrestleMania?
Well, you know what? I can see, I know people want to see that Undertaker versus Sting match, but I could definitely see if done right, we can have two icons clash at WrestleMania, and he's been talking about getting in ring shape, getting ready. I can see a Sting versus Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Ooh, wow. Austin versus Sting.
Yep.
At WrestleMania 31.
Yep.
Wow. That would be very intriguing.
And that's a Frank D original right there.
And, you know, I honestly think, Frank, at this point, we're running the poll currently at Gerwig.net. Do you think, you know, will Undertaker have a match at WrestleMania 31? I think it's entirely possible Undertaker may not wrestle at this year's WrestleMania. I think they may have to, as you said, come up with another specialty match, and that certainly would be a great specialty match. I think there's a better than 50-50 chance that Undertaker's going to sit out this year.
Undertaker, you know, was at, I guess it was at WizardCon or something like that. He was at somewhere. And
yeah.
He didn't exactly rule it out that he would be there. He didn't rule it out. He didn't say he wasn't going to be there. But, I'm looking at it from a different point of view. Yeah, him versus Sting would be cool, but Sting versus Stone Cold would be even better.
So if you're booking, and you're kind of in a fantasy world right now, but it could happen.
Yeah.
If Steve Austin says, Frank D, I need one more match. I'm going to come back. I'm going to get ring shape. I'm going to do it. Who is the best individual? Who's the guy I can make the most money with going back into the ring?
Two people. I would say you can make money with a guy you haven't wrestled with since you were in WCW, Sting, who's also never wrestled in a WWE ring, or you can wrestle Brock Lesnar for the championship.
Interesting. That's another interesting matchup. Yeah, definitely. The whole question is, Frank, is Austin really serious? He's teased us before. Every now and then, he does his own little podcast there.
I think
there.
He's more. I already know what the question you're going to ask me, so I'm going to go ahead and answer it.
Yeah.
I think Austin's serious about it because WWE is going to put the pressure on him to get him to do it because they realize that with the streak ending, they have nothing to hook people next year for Mania. They got to make it special. So how special would it be? The return of Stone Cold Steve Austin. Oh, we got Austin on the show. Oh, we got Sting on the show. This is going to be the biggest WrestleMania of all time.
So you could potentially do Austin versus Sting and then probably, The Rock versus Brock?
Maybe they could,
The two headline matches of next year's WrestleMania, potentially?
Potentially, yeah.
Yeah. Because, as I said, I think there's...
I don't think Roman Reigns is ready.
No.
And that's what they're looking at. They're saying Roman Reigns versus Brock Lesnar. That match to me doesn't have any appeal whatsoever.
And what's hurting that match is Roman Reigns is out and Brock Lesnar is only there half the time.
Right. Now here's another scenario too that I just came up with right now that I was thinking about too. It's another match that these two guys have never butted heads on WWE TV and they've never done anything, as far as pay per view goes. What about Brock Lesnar defending the championship against Batista?
I think you've brought that up before as potential opponents for Brock Lesnar. I like it.
Yeah.
I think Batista's last run was very lackluster, but you build him back up again, and I like monster versus monster.
It's a different time now with Batista. Batista has had a very successful film. He's got some movies lined up with one with Robert De Niro. Batista is off and running to the races now. I think he could be just as successful in Hollywood as The Rock.
What would bold the question? Does Batista want to even go back in the ring anymore?
I think Batista wants to come back and come back for one more run to erase the negativity of the last run. Absolutely.
So you think he's a person that cares about his legacy?
Oh, absolutely. I think Batista. Yeah, I think he does. He wasn't happy with the way things turned out, and I don't blame him.
No, I don't blame him either. That was very lackluster.
But also, I have to look at it too, from a business point of view. Is his people, you read the reports that the people that work with him, the agents and all that stuff, they weren't too happy with how he was treated on WWE TV and the fact that he didn't get what he was supposed to get, which was, I would think, he was supposed to get that belt. He didn't get it.
I would think that would, if they were talking about him returning, I would think they would at least mention, you're going to be definitely in that mix to get that championship. And,
but how do you
trust
that?
They said, hey, you come back and you're going to get Batista versus Randy Orton at WrestleMania for the championship. And then they throw that out the window. And I definitely think that upset him. And I definitely think the situation with going back with Triple H again and reforming Evolution just didn't set well with the guy. That's why I'm not 100% convinced he'd come back right away. Especially if this movie career takes off and it's very successful, you kind of get that feeling. I mean, Batista's, 45 years old?
Right.
You say, hey, why take the risk of bumping in the ring and something going wrong? Or, we saw what happened with Stone Cold Steve Austin one time. Why take that risk when I can just stay home and make millions of dollars? And, hey, it was their fault they messed up, not me. I didn't drop the ball. They dropped the ball.
Yeah.
So I can see it both ways.
It's a different time. That's why I say it's a different time now. Because everybody was burying that Guardians of the Galaxy movie way before it came out. They said that it wasn't going to do good, and they were burying it. I mean, Triple H even buried him, saying, oh, your movie career flops. You don't come running back here. Well, it didn't flop.
Nope.
It didn't flop. That's the thing about it. It didn't flop. I don't even think about why anybody would even thought the movie wasn't going to do good anyway. It's a damn Marvel Comics movie. I'm partial myself to the DC universe, but I knew it was going to do well because it's a Marvel comic movie and everybody's into Marvel right now with the Avengers and all that. So, yeah, I knew it was going to do good. And Batista, has a lot more leverage now. He's a bigger star than he was before WrestleMania.
We heard from our good friend Ravon with his usual two questions for us, and he said that he enjoyed the Frankie Kazarian interview, which, by the way, if you missed it, with the Teddy Long interview and the Vince Russo interviews, those are available. Go to Gerwig.net, go to the bottom of our page, and you can check out audio previous podcasts that we've done, interviews, the Body Slam podcast, etc. But this week he's got two questions about Triple Snaz, the Nose-in-Law, Triple H, the game. He says his first question is, if Triple H didn't get injured back in 2001, how do you think his character would have been booked in the Invasion storyline?
You know, I hear that all the time and always wondered where Triple H would have been. Because if you remember, Steve, at that point in time, before the Invasion angle happened, Triple H was a heel with Steve Austin. They were the tag team champions, I believe. They were known as the two-man power trip. So, and they were wrestling, who were they feuding with? Jericho and, I believe, Benoit at that time, I think. Obviously, Austin defected to the Alliance, defected over there to the other side. I think Trips would have been the guy that would have been, they would have turned him babyface, of course. And he would have been probably feuding with Stephanie a little bit earlier than they did. That's what I think would have happened. I think that Trips would have turned babyface. Trips would have been Vince's last resort to try to ease over this Invasion angle. And then Trips probably would have turned heel again.
And then his second question goes with Undertaker versus Triple H. We've seen that match several times. He asked about TV matches, but I'm assuming he means pay-per-view as well. Which is the best Undertaker versus Triple H match, and which one do you think is the worst? And, of course, they had the two matches at WrestleMania back-to-back. I thought the second WrestleMania match they had was a disappointment, especially compared to the first match.
Right.
I don't know if I would necessarily consider that the worst match they've ever had. There may have been some television matches I'm not thinking of, but as I would think of like ranking those matches, that was definitely on the bottom.
I have to say myself personally that the best match I saw them have was at WrestleMania 17 in Houston in 2001. The worst match, I kind of would say that I did not like the WrestleMania match they had with the Hell in a Cell. And I didn't like it because Shawn Michaels was out there involved in it. I think if it had been a straight-up fight, it would have been that would have been the way to go. I didn't really, be honest with you, there didn't even need to be a second match between them two at WrestleMania back-to-back. I think Trips was just trying to outdo Shawn, and it didn't work. It didn't happen.
Well, as I remember, wasn't the second build Triple H coming out and saying, I'm the only guy that you can wrestle. We're the two biggest stars in this company. We have to wrestle at a time when
You're trying
Triple
to push the new
right.
talent.
Right.
He's, you know, Triple H to the aspect of his character and the man. Triple H is very smart. But Triple H is also a dumbass because he buries his own roster.
Yep.
You know, you know what I'm saying? It's like he like the other day on Raw last Monday, you know, he said a comment about The Miz, said something about Miz having a straight-to-DVD career, a straight-to-DVD movie career. And it's like, why would you do that? You're trying to build up The Miz's persona as his Hollywood character now. Why? What's the point of doing it? Why would you bury the guy? And to be quite honest, you know, about it, I don't remember Triple H ever doing any big blockbuster movies outside of Blade.
No, I can't either.
So I don't know, man. It's just, Trips is very questionable in some of the stuff he does.
And he thinks you're a mark anyway, so what difference does it make what you say about him, right? He doesn't care what you think anyways.
I give a damn what Triple H, if Triple H thinks what I, if he cares what I think or not, he can care less. I'm not the one in charge of running that empire that is WWE. He has the pressure put on him to come up with new concepts and new stars.
And right now, they're not delivering.
Exactly. And, you know, you hear the rumors all the time about the possible power struggle that's going on behind the scenes between him and Vince. Listen, there is no power struggle. At the end of the day, Vince McMahon is the one who runs that. And that's how it's going to be until Vince McMahon retires.
I mean, Frank, if Triple H is today's Jim Ross, you know, going back to talent relations, I mean, during the Jim Ross era, when he was in talent relations, you made all the new stars. Nowadays, I mean, what's their excuse? They own NXT. They own the old Florida Championship Wrestling. They have their own performance center. They have all these guys under contract. And a lot of times when they come to television, they're either not ready or they give them a generic character anyway. So I think right now, as you evaluate Triple H, he's just not getting the ball done. He may be delivering a good NXT show, but I know, what are these guys going to translate on WWE television? I don't see them making new stars in a time when they desperately need some new stars, some fresh faces on that very stale product.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I can't answer that because I don't know what's going on through his brain. But the creative sucks. Creative really sucks. You have all these guys. You want a way to cut costs? Fire your creative department. Get people in there. Get people in there that actually know what the hell they're doing. You know, you got people there like Road Dogg and all these guys that have been through the trenches that pretty much know all about how to make somebody and put somebody over. Use those guys. Why are you using this damn creative team that doesn't know nothing about wrestling?
You know, when they send all these surveys out, fans are actually saying they like what they're seeing. And I don't know. They sending these emails out to the 13, 14-year-old boys out there, but I can't believe they would get a large response, especially looking at the ratings now, that, you know, what they're giving us is what people want.
No, I don't. I'm going to tell you right now, I think that's all a lie, because I haven't gotten a survey from them in a while. And I think the reason why is that I was very critical of them, everything that they would do. They must be getting it from the 13, 14 demographic they want.
Yeah, like where do they get these 90% approval rating for the network? Where are they getting that from?
Exactly. I didn't take part in that survey.
Nor did I.
So I would have. If it would have been me, I would have buried them.
Yeah, it's like, if you want my opinion, it's not hard to find.
Right.
We tell it like it is here on the Gerwick Report podcast. And if you've missed a previous podcast, as I said, go to the audio section at Gerwick.net. Check out all the previous podcasts we've done. We've done 53 podcasts now, Frank. So we did just recently some special interviews we had with Vince Russo, Teddy Long, and Frankie Kazarian. And we got some special guests lined up as well. So, you know, stay tuned for some bigger things here at the Gerwick Report podcast.
Absolutely.